We're now recording.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings workgroup meeting on Thursday, the 3rd of May. We have Andriy Pazyuk, Michele Nalon, Mutch Schneller, Alan Greenberg, John Berryhill, Laurie Anderson, Sherry Falco, Randy Ferguson. From staff, we have Marty Milam, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted today from Faisal Shah, Volker Greimann, David Roach Turner, and Brian Beckham. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Andriy's just dropped off the call. We'll be dialing back to him now. Thank you. Over to you, Michele.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, all that. Okay, then. We've done our roll call. The general question I have to ask, of course, is does anybody have an update to the statement of interest? Going once? Going twice? Oh, okay, moving on. Just before we start with this recording, a few new people have joined the group. Some of you may not have statements of interest already set up in the wiki. The lovely ladies from the GNSO Secretariat have sent out passwords or are in the process of sending out passwords so that you can create or update them on the wiki. If you have any issues with this, please let them know. Now, next item on the agenda, something we've been avoiding for the last few weeks, is the election of working group leaders. Who would like to be chair of this working group? Are there any volunteers? Oh, come on. Silence. It's killing me. Alan Greenberg, are you interested in...
I'm a newbie who doesn't know anything about this and joined the group to learn something, so I think a chair at this point is probably inappropriate.
Well, at the moment, I've been serving as interim chair since I was one of the co-chairs of the drafting team.
Based on my experience, that's a kiss of death. You're probably a chair.
Thanks, Alan.
I ran a whole PDP only being acting chair, so.
Oh, I think I was in that one. Yeah. Okay, then. Ideally, how do I handle this? At present, I'm the interim chair. If you wish to confirm me as chair, I think there's a process that has to be followed. Ideally, however, it would make sense if there was at least a second chair, a co-chair, or whatever, because at certain times I will be unable to make these conference calls. Having a second person who can look after these things would be helpful. Plus, also, it helps to bring a certain level of sanity. I'm Irish and possibly insane. Anybody going to step forward, or should I pick on somebody?
Michele, it's Alan. I'm willing to work with you if you'd like. I prefer to be vice chair because it's going to take me a while to get up to speed.
Okay, that would be fantastic. Thank you, Alan. Does anybody else have anybody else wish to volunteer at this time? Marika, what is the exact process here? Just remind me, bearing in mind that it's only 10 o'clock in the morning for me, so I'm completely confused.
This is Rick. I think the appropriate next step would be just to circulate on the mailing list that those, you know, assuming that there are no objections or I haven't seen anyone raising any hands, that, you know, the proposal from the working group is to have you as the chair and Alan as the vice chair, give people, you know, maybe a week to, you know, either support or object or you know, not say anything to that on the mailing list. And if there is support from the working group, that should be sent to the council for confirmation. It basically works the way I think it's council is informed, and if there is no objection to that, it's accepted. And I think it's then probably should go through the council liaison, which is Joy.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. All right, so we'll send that out to the mailing list, and then we can wait for people to object. Right then. Marie, could you bring up the draft public comment forum document, please?
It's coming up now, and maybe just to give a little bit of background for those that weren't on last week's call or that are new, one of the charter requirements for this group, or one of the first steps this group needs to take, is to obtain public input. And we had some discussions on that on last week's call. There are, you know, different avenues the working group could explore to obtain that input. We've been speaking about, you know, possibly inviting experts, maybe in combination with organizing a public session in Prague. But, of course, one of the obvious outreach mechanisms is a public comment forum. And I think there, you know, I didn't at least hear any objections to at least pursuing that that already. And to kickstart discussions on that, what I did is prepared a first draft of, you know, completing the template that we use for opening such a public comment forum, which will hopefully help, you know, move the working group forward on having language that we agree upon and putting out and opening this forum as soon as possible to allow people to provide input. So what I've basically done is just, you know, look what's currently in the charter and, you know, fill that information here, trying to explain what the working group is doing and what is chartered to do. But, of course, the working group might want to decide to put in more specific questions in here or, you know, direct in a certain way people forward to further information. So this is really just a starting point, and, you know, it's open for the working group to decide how they want to, you know, organize a forum.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, has the decision been made whether we're going to do something in Prague or not? My inclination is, if we are going to do a session in Prague, is to time the comment period so it's still open after that, to give people a chance, once they've been briefed, to make a formal comment. And since comment periods are typically only open for 3 weeks for initial comments, that would be long over by the time we got to Prague if we do it if we start immediately.
Okay. Marika, and then Matt?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to confirm that we did request a meeting time for the working group in Prague. The request I've put in is for a meeting on Thursday morning from 9 to 10:30. However, it's still, you know, open for the working group to discuss how to organize that session, whether that's going to be a working group meeting, so just a working group, whether that's going to be a session where experts are going to be invited to give, you know, testimony or talk about issues, whether that's going to be a public session indeed to, you know, direct maybe people to the public comment forum, or whether the group decides in the end that a session is not needed. So that's really still open for a discussion and decision by the working group.
I guess what I was saying was we should defer the decision on the timing of the public comment until we've had that discussion.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and thanks, Marika, for holding that time slot in the Prague meeting. That if we're going to have the public comment forum open up, maybe it makes sense to put out a targeted request for information about current practices to registrars and I guess maybe to service providers, UDRP dispute service providers as well. So we have a little bit of raw data that we can provide that may help us get back more targeted comments when we do open the comment period as well. And I apologize. I had meant to work on drafting up some questions to circulate prior to this meeting, but I'm sort of the big INTA trademark professional conference is coming up this coming week, and so I've just sort of been slammed trying to get out the door for that. But I should definitely have time to at least pull something together and circulate it prior to our next call. Sorry about not getting that done for this one.
Thank you. Luke has put on the chat there something about benefiting from the CAC perspective. Luke, I'm a bit thick. What exactly is CAC?
The Czech Arbitration Court.
Oh, the Czech one, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks. one other thing. Are people happy with the name of this working group, or do you want to give it a better name? Because at the moment we're stuck with this wonderful mouthful of locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings a bit of a mouthful.
Hi, this is Sherry. I actually was curious about that fact. Is it limited to the UDRP specifically, or could it be broadened to the concept of generally domain name locking for dispute resolution procedures in light of the forthcoming URS procedures and the wave of activity that's going to be required in that new environment? I wasn't sure if we wanted to just limit it to the UDRP or really focus on domain locking as the goal and not specific to the UDRP, but expand it to general dispute policies and procedures. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Marika has her hand up. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. It's more from a procedural perspective because I think the charter does specifically limit it to the UDRP. However,
okay.
If the working group would feel that, you know, it would be beneficial that some of the recommendations might also apply to other mechanisms, there's always the opportunity for the working group to request to the GNSO Council to broaden the scope. And I guess, you know, there might be good reasons why, you know, it would make sense. So I think that, you know, in principle, it's limited to the UDRP, but if there, you know, is consensus on the working group that it should go broader, the group can always make that request to the GNSO Council to consider widening the scope of the working group.
Okay.
Just as a matter of interest, has the URS thing been finalized, or is it still kind of up in the air?
This is Sherry again. I don't feel like I'm the authority on that question, but I know in terms of the new GTLD application process, every new applicant had to agree to abide by those procedures, and those procedures were part of the new registry service agreement that one would enter into with ICANN. So I think in some form there is a template or a working protocol that's been established because new applicants have to agree to it. And then I think some of the mechanics and the details and the providers have yet to be fully flushed out, but I know that there's a basic framework that is in place.
Okay. Margie and then Alan.
Yes, this is Margie. That's correct. There's the URS procedure is part of the applicant guidebook, but the actual implementation of it, all the details associated with it, hasn't been ironed out yet, is my understanding. And so I believe that that's something that staff is working on, as it's also working on, for example, the Trademark Clearinghouse and other, you know, things like that. And so if this group feels that it's something it wants to address, you know, it could be in the form of maybe guidance or, you know, implementation advice, for example. And then, you know, that would get sent over to staff as staff develops the details for the URS.
Matt, and then Alan.
Hey, just going to say, since I also put a comment up, but the where Section 8 of the UDRP is a little vague, the current URS documentation, which I understand is essentially final, is pretty specific already about locking obligations. It sets up a 24-hour period from the time that the URS provider sends notice to the registrar. So I think there's maybe more ambiguity to clear up at this point for the UDRP than there is for URS, even though URS is still pretty much in its infancy.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Yeah, I was going to say something similar to what Margie and Matt just said, that the URS is already pretty specific on it. It may need some cleaning up. But, of course, how quickly we act will also impact whether we can still give advice on the URS or whether it requires a real PDP to change. If we report back in 6 months, which we're not likely to, that's fine. If it takes us 2 years, then it's a different game. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Of course, the other thing, just speaking about as a registrar, is we have no actual experience of the URS yet. So maybe it won't need to have anything done to it. I don't know. So we can come back to this again. But to answer Sherry's question, if we want to expand beyond the UDRP, then we would need to go to the GNSO to request a permission to do so, because it's not within our current charter.
Okay.
Is that okay, Sherry?
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Just for those people who haven't been in working groups in the past, I'll try to kind of explain this. Alan and other people like that have been around for a lot longer and probably say this more coherently. The charter that we have is a charter that was approved by the GNSO. Now, there might be areas within the charter where we might need to seek clarification, just kind of find out, okay, is it okay if we go into this area or something like that? But changing the actual charter would require that the chartering organization give its okay, basically. I think that kind of... Does that sound okay, Marika, or have I made a massive faux pas?
No, that's exactly right.
Phew! Sorry, I always defer to Marika or Margie when it comes to these things. But if you look, which documents you keep flipping documents around? Okay.
Yes, as we were just talking about a charter, I thought it might be helpful just to put it up in case some people haven't had a chance yet to look at it in detail. Indeed, the charter basically prescribes, you know, what the working group is tasked to do, and as Michaela said, if you know the working group is in agreement that there should be changes or recommend that there should be expansion of the current scope, this is always something that can be taken back to the GNSO Council for their consideration.
Okay. So just quickly looking at the charter, if you look at the document that Marika's put up there, there's an introductory text, and then there's a number of points, kind of questions, queries that need to be addressed. Now, you know, you can have a look through it. If there's anything that you're not clear about or whatever, please do let us know. Now, moving back, in terms of the working group title, I do quite like Luke's suggestion, but I doubt that would be politically correct. So I think we'll have to say thank you, Luke, for the suggestion, but let's not use that. Marika, could you put up the public forum thing again, please? And, sorry, go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, was your comment on changing the name in reference to Luke's last one?
Final battle, yes.
Oh, well, okay, but up above there was the part before the colon suggested UDRP domain lock working group.
Oh, yeah, that one's fine. I'm quite happy with that one. It was his final battle, what I thought might ensure.
That's what I thought. So is that a recommendation that we are changing the name then?
No. It was just in terms of if we want to reference... I mean, it's part of the thing, Alan, as you know from previous groups that you've been involved with me, that, you know, if we keep on using these really long, complicated... working group titles, then when we go looking for comments from the community, people are going to get brain freeze when they read the working group title, never mind getting into the documentation or anything beyond that.
Yeah, Michele, I'm agreeing with you. That's why I'm supporting changing the title to that short one.
Yeah, I mean, so if people are in agreement with something simpler and clearer, I mean, you could put in a subtext, you know, exactly what it is, but I just think that this terribly long, wordy one isn't going to help getting feedback or interest from the rest of the world, really.
And based on experience, you're going to have to say it about 4,000 times over the next year or so.
Yes, exactly. That was the other thing I was thinking.
Yeah, UDRP domain lock sounds fine to me.
Yeah. Victoria, please go ahead.
I'm just wondering, perhaps someone can explain this to me, but I'm just having a quick look at the URF, and I can see that it's got its own very precise provisions about locking of domains subject to URS proceedings. I mean, first of all, that should inform us and we should look at it, because there was probably some discussion about it. But I'm just wondering, had we overlooked that? So perhaps there'd been some thought into restricting the mandated. I mean, I was on the charter drafting team, but we weren't referred to it. And someone perhaps was aware of this. So what I'm saying is that this work has already been done in the context of the URS. It's provision paragraph 4.1 of the URS, notice and locking of a domain. Within 24 hours of receipt of the notice of complaint from the URS provider, the registry operator shall lock the domain, etc., right through to 4.4. I mean, it's obviously something for us to have a look at when considering the UDRP provisions, but to what extent, I guess one of the issues that should be on our agenda is to what extent would it be appropriate to have different provisions in each forum?
Okay. Margie?
This is Margie. I just wanted to provide some background, because I don't know if you all were tracking the GNSS Council discussions that led to this PDP. We had I had drafted a final issue report on the review of the UDRP, and it was a very comprehensive document covering a lot of things, and deferred it in part because it wanted to get some feedback and experience with the implementation of the URS. But because the locking issue seemed to be one issue that was causing a lot of angst and difficulties, they made the decision to focus on the locking issue as opposed to the entire UDRP, thinking that the review of the entire UDRP could happen after we've got experience from the URS to know that, you know, the changes that are in there were effective. So that's kind of the background as to why we focused on just this issue as opposed to the broader issues. But you're right, it certainly could inform this group as it comes up with the rules for locking for the UDRP.
Thanks, Margie.
Can I, actually, I've just got one other question, if you don't mind, while I'm asking. It's the only other question I have, I think. And that, I wonder if someone would be kind enough, and forgive me for not having done my reading earlier, but would someone be kind enough to refer me to the page reference in the best practice paper about 48 hours? Because I can't seem to find it. It's, you know, in the overview document that we drafted last week, there's a reference here, time frame, under number 3. Time frame suggested in best practice was 48 hours from receipt of provider. I can't find that reference in the best practice paper, but maybe I'm looking at the wrong best practice paper.
This is Marika. I actually received a copy of, the version that was discussed in Sydney, and I'll have a look if it's in there, but it probably is in there, and I'll circulate that to the working group.
Is that the 28th of September 2011 paper?
Hold on. I need to check which one. It actually doesn't have a date on it. It just says 2009, I can workshop Sydney.
Right. I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but I find that, you know, it's just one of my constant grizzles, and it's probably just because I'm not up to date, and I'm sure lots of other people are, but, you know, a reading list for members of working groups I think will be just so helpful, because, you know, it's the dark side of transparency, isn't it? If you know, it can be incredibly difficult to find the relevant things if you're not pointed to them and if you don't know, you know, about related developments that are going on. But I wonder if it'd be possible for the group to have a reading list of things that would be relevant to our work, because it looks to me like there are. I did ask this question when we were on the drafting team, and the drafting team had almost nothing to read. And you know, it's very difficult to create boundaries around some work when you've got absolutely no background. And interestingly, getting to the next stage of being on this group, there is actually stuff to read, which we could have had last time. But in any event, it'd be nice to have it now, just so that one's not in the dark.
Marika?
Yeah, and this is Marika. If I may respond, I think this working group is a little bit in a unique situation whereby normally when a PDP gets started, it starts with an issue report on that specific issue. And normally that issue report is then where, you know, all that information is gathered, and where, you know, maybe have a base of, like, these are the different documents that a working group should review and considering the issue, and here are some other, you know, fora where the issue has been discussed. But I think in this case it's rather unique, as a specific issue was drawn out, as Margie explained, from the overall UDRP review, and therefore it only received, you know, relatively limited attention in the issue report, as it was really part of a much broader scope. And I think that's why, as well, one of the first tasks of the working group is actually to try to find that information, because we didn't do that information gathering really at the start. You know, now in the discussions, you know, we realize that, oh, there might be some information in the URS that's relevant. There was this discussions on the in the best practice, on that best practices paper that was done a couple of years ago that some working group members were aware of. So I think that's partly why we're in this situation, and where, you know, jointly the working group should indeed, as a first step, try to identify those different bits and pieces of information that are going to be relevant in discussing and reviewing this issue. So I think that's a bit where this comes from, because I think in a normal situation, indeed, you do have a paper to start off with that outlines, you know, different documents that where information has been drawn from. So, but we're in a little bit of a different situation with this working group, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Is that okay, Victoria?
It is, though I would say, thank you for that, and I do understand, but I would say it's always an issue I have on the working group. So, I'm not sure it is such a limited problem. I think basically it should be a staff, only the staff have the knowledge, I think, probably, or the comprehensive overview of the related issues. And I think it should be a staff function. I mean, you know, the help we get from staff is amazing, but I think, you know, preparing a reading list would should be something that, some thought should be given to as a matter of good practice, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I think, Marika, weren't a couple of links sent around to a few of these documents already?
Right. What I did do, and that was already at the time, I think, of the drafting team, what I tried to do is indeed gather the different bits and pieces that I was able to find that, you know, spoke about this issue, so such as what was discussed in the IIT2 working group, what was in the new UDRP issue report. I think there's some links as well to the UDRP itself, and I'm trying to remember what else was in there. And then, of course, you know, I think John already circulated the link as well to the session in Sydney that spoke about the issue as well. So, so there are a couple of bits and pieces that, you know, we've tried already to get together, but, you know, I think here, we really rely as well on those that are expert in this area to point to different elements that the working group should be looking at and reviewing to really facilitate the conversation.
Okay. I mean, we are lucky there's a couple of experts within this group. I mean, I'm looking at John Berryhill, obviously. Good morning, John. And also Laurie as well. I know has a lot of experience in this area. Maybe if we can just recirculate any of those links that were circulated previously, if there's other stuff that people think that we need to look at, it might be helpful just to push that back onto the mailing list. Go ahead, Marika.
And this is Marika. I think one of the challenges on the best practices paper, because, for example, that wasn't there was no link on the document wasn't posted on the Sydney forum. And I do believe, if I understood John correctly, or the conversations as well in Sydney, that actually further work was done after that meeting, but never got published. So there, you know, possibly are further versions that are somewhere out there, but that were never, you know, agreed upon or publicly shared as such. And I don't know if that's something where, for example, that 48-hour discussion came from, or people maybe remarked that as part of that discussion in Sydney, but it was never, you know, published in a document and discussed or you know, communicated as such. But I said I'll get the latest or the version that was used for the discussion in Sydney and circulate that to the group. And I'm seeing John has raised his hand, so hopefully he can shed some more light on that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you could ask Khalil Rashid, I think was the custodian of that document, whether or not that could be circulated to the list, that would be great. My last instructions from ICANN legal staff was that it was not for circulation. So I think Khalil can let us circulate that.
I have the version from Khalil that was used for the Sydney, but as I understood, indeed, some of the work that has been done after that is, you know, wasn't signed off on by the different parties, so might not be appropriate to share publicly. That's what I understood.
Well,
so I personally, Yeah, go ahead.
Whatever the last available thing is, if you could get that on the list, that'd be great.
Okay. Yes, I'll do so.
I mean, Marika, just a practical, stupid, dumb question. I mean, if you put a great big draft across the top of the whatever the latest version is, would that satisfy people, or is there a problem with the even circulating a draft document if people haven't agreed to it? I'm just trying to understand the issue here.
This is Marika. I'm not sure because I wasn't involved in any of those conversations, but maybe I can just share what was the basis for the Sydney discussion, which I think helps better understand as well what was discussed there for those that did listen to the recording, because it does refer to, you know, page X, Y, Z on certain discussions. So maybe, you know, that can serve as a starting point, and you know, I think maybe we can see from there if there's benefit in looking at any of the further drafts. But as I said, I don't have access to that, and I'm not really sure whether you know, people will be comfortable in sharing that, as those weren't, you know, vetted by everyone.
Okay. Okay, going back to the document here for the public comment template. The first few bits of that are just kind of standard boilerplate. I think everybody can move the can navigate the document themselves, can't they, Marika?
Yes.
Okay, so you can just grab it and move it around yourself if you need to scroll up or down. The only bits, which are the bits that we need to look at? Hold on a second.
This is Marika. Basically, the part on the description and explanation and purpose, that's where, you know, we really outline what the questions are. And as I said, you know, what I've done here is just basically almost copy and paste what is currently in the charter, and, you know, just asking people to provide input on that. Alan suggested maybe we need to wait with putting this out until after the Prague meeting. I guess the question is, does it make sense to, you know, work on this now, or, you know, leave this aside for now and then first work on the other outreach elements, you know, which are requesting input from registrars and registries and other, you know, GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies.
Okay. In terms of timing, what is the maximum period we can have a comment period open for?
There, as far as I'm aware, there's no maximum. There is a minimum. There's a minimum of 21 days plus 21 days for responses. So yes, an option would be just to open it and leave it open until after Prague, for example. As far as I'm aware, there's no limit on how long a public comment period can be open.
So in theory, we could open the comment period, let's say hypothetically, at the beginning of June and leave it open until, let's say hypothetically, the second week of July or something, if we wanted to.
Yes, exactly. As long as there's a first phase and a second phase, which is, you know, the public comment forum, and then the second phase, which is the reply period. As long as that's respected, then there's no problem.
Okay. Right. Fine. Oh, yeah, it says Alan's just put in the chat there, we could open today and keep it open until July, whatever. Okay, so one of the things that I think we probably need to have a look at is the description, explanation, and purpose. Background bit, I suppose, isn't going to really need much change. It's more the description, explanation, and purpose where there might be some tweaking and questions and things of that people might want to add. If you all scroll down, you should see that there. And as Marika says, it's basically a copy and paste from the charter. Just reading through this, so it's quite, word I'm looking for, quite wordy in some respects. Maybe it might, it might not be a bad idea to look at simplifying the language there in some respects. So the bullet points there, where the creation of an outline of a proposed procedure which a complainant must follow in order for a registrar to place a domain name on a registrar lock would be desirable. Okay, I understood that, but that's actually, can we word that better, is the question I would ask. Another one, whether the creation of an outline of the steps of the process the registrar can reasonably expect to take place during a UDRP dispute would be desirable, whether the time frame by which a registrar must lock a domain after a UDRP has been filed should be standardized, whether what constitutes a locked domain name should be defined, whether once a domain name is locked pursuant to a UDRP proceeding, the registrant information for that domain name may be changed or modified. As a question, is there a difference between changed or modified? I mean, surely the two words mean the same thing. I'm missing something. Marika?
I would expect change to indicate a change of registrant, whereas modification would be, you know, a correction or update.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Joe. I'm not a lawyer, so it looked like the same thing to me. Whether additional safeguards should be created for protection of registrants in cases where the domain name is locked subject to UDRP proceeding. I mean, are there other questions that people want to ask as part of a public comment period? Victoria, go ahead.
I mean, I have to say, I don't want to repeat my earlier point, but without having done a bit of background reading, it's a little difficult to be... I'm sure we will discuss these questions again, but frankly, I'd like to go away and read some of the material before we... and I'm sorry that I haven't done so earlier.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I'll say the same thing in a different way. I think we need to think about these carefully. I look at this and I say, look at the question whether what constitutes a locked domain should be defined, and then whether you can change the who is information. Aren't those two almost the same thing? By defining exactly what we mean by a locked name, we're going to have to say what is locked. Is it the address pointing to the website? Is it the detailed contact information? Is it who owns it? I think those are all part and parcel of the same thing. And I think when we're asking questions, we need to make sure that the question is clear. And the fact that I think those two are the same thing implies to me they're not clear right now. And I think we need perhaps to refine them and maybe put examples so we're drawing attention to the questions we really want answered when people comment. I think we need to do some work. Thank you.
All right. Marika?
Yeah, and this is Marika. Maybe I've probably created that confusion because if you look at the chart, those questions are actually numbered, and those questions are 4A and 4B. So I think the drafting team did see as well that there was a clear overlap and linking, so they link them together in that way by calling them A and B, but I thought maybe it would be confusing here to have numbers in here, so I took that out. But if people think just having it as a A-B question to make clear that those two items are linked, that would be easy to change, unless, of course, you want to do further rewording or changing.
Okay. Thanks, Marika. Okay, based on what I've heard from both Alan and Victoria, then... maybe what we need to look at is just looking at some at trying to clarify a few of the key, terms. Laurie's just put in the chat there, maintain the status quo, in my opinion, would refer to keeping everything the same, contact info, DNS, preventing transfer or expiration/cancellation. So, for example, status quo, does everybody agree on what the status quo is, or do you see the status quo as being something which is possibly a grey area? I'm seeing Luke on the chat saying as well, DNS would be impossible for a registrar that don't provide DNS service, let alone hosting service. I mean, is there a general agreement or disagreement on what some of these terms mean? So maybe we need to focus on those initially to get some kind of feel of what people feel, get some kind of understanding of how people perceive those concepts first. Or am I going the wrong way with this? Alan?
Yeah, I think in regard to Luke's comment, clearly we can't put requirements there that are impossible. and that happens to be one of them. You know, we can't say DNS can't be changed if no one that we can enforce anything over has control over that. So I think we need a sanity check of what we require. But given that, I'm agreeing. We need to. My God, we need to look at what we're trying to say and then put it in clear words. I don't think we should be bound by the words in the charter in this case. If they're confusing, then we need to make sure that what we're asking is not confusing.
Okay. Marika, I'll come back to you in a second. Laurie?
Yeah, I was just going to say that with respect to the UDRP, DNS isn't that relevant because it's all about, you know, it's more about trademarks. So, and it's more important in litigation cases. So, you know, DNS, I don't think is that important.
Okay. Marika?
From a lock standpoint.
This is Morgan. Just to comment on the status quo question, because I think that's one of the key issues, because indeed if you look at the UDRP itself, the language, I mean, it doesn't talk about locking, it just talks about status quo. I think that's part of, you know, what this working group is looking at, what does that mean? So indeed, you know, having a common understanding, I think, is already a big step in the right direction, but I think as some point out in the chat, you know, that will be one of the questions maybe to get further input on how that's being defined at the moment.
Okay. John?
Yeah, the question to be resolved in a UDRP is whether the registrant is going to keep the name or whether the name is going to be transferred. And I think status quo needs to be understood in that context of who the registrant is. You know, in terms of operational aspects of the domain name, such as DNS or name servers or something like that, you know, there's no presumption that there's anything wrong with the way that the domain name is functioning merely because a UDRP has been filed, and doing things to DNS or name servers provides an opportunity, you know, for a lot of mischief. The important thing that people are worried about is cyber flight, that the name's going to get transferred to some other registrar during the course of a proceeding. But given that what a UDRP does is determine whether or not there's going to be a transfer of ownership, I think you need to understand status quo in that context, which is distinct from the URS, which does not have a transfer of ownership as an outcome, and operates on a shorter time scale.
Okay, thanks, John. Laurie?
Sorry, no. That's an old hand.
Okay. Just a couple of things from the chat, just for transcript purposes. Matt suggesting we should ask the registrar constituent group for an overall view of current practices. And Laurie agrees with John. Registrant info is the most important from the UDRP standpoint. Okay. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this? No? Okay. As the status quo is something that we will have to battle with, is it worth our while then for people to kind of... for us to discuss maybe via the mailing list what we understand as the status quo, what we understand it is and doesn't refer to. Okay, so John agrees with me.
Woohoo!
Okay, so let's... what I'll try to do is I'll try to post a couple of questions... a couple of emails to the list with a couple of questions that maybe people might want to try to answer in some shape or form. Maybe we can thrash through some kind of, I won't use the word definition because I think that's a dangerous word to use, some kind of working understanding maybe, a working definition, I don't know, something that would just give us some area where we don't disagree too strongly. The term locked doesn't actually appear in the UDRP anywhere, does it, John?
No, it doesn't.
The rest of that document, so ideally, do people feel at this stage that we should be asking the registrars for feedback on their current practices, or should we be focusing on the this public comment document, which would be, or go ahead, Victoria.
I just wonder if we're jumping ahead of ourselves, because are we yet in a position to even, are we putting the cart before the horse, really? Are we really haven't informed ourselves sufficiently to form any views? And there's been quite a lot of work done to date, I understand. So we may be replicating outreach until we comprehensively work out what's already occurred. There's been a lot of earlier work, and someone was saying that this had proved very contentious before. So, frankly, I really do think we really need to comprehensively study what's been already done, what issues have arisen from it. I don't really understand the issue with draft. I don't understand why we can't have the benefit of draft work to date. I don't understand the confidence issues that might be involved in that, but I'd be happy if someone could explain them. I'm just sort of concerned that we might be wasting time and replicating, what looks like it's been fairly comprehensively reviewed.
Thanks. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. Just to explain on the paper, because I don't want people to think that, the paper was, that paper didn't focus solely on locking. I think what I really wanted to try as well to avoid, and if people listen to the conversation of the city meeting, that addressed UDRP in general. It didn't only look specifically at the locking issue. So I think, although I think it is important to look at what in the paper addresses in relation to locking, I do want to caution the working group not to use that paper as a starting point and reopen all the other issues that are linked to it, because I think then we might really get off track, and that's one of the reasons why that effort didn't go anywhere, because there are a lot of other contentious issues that are maybe more difficult to resolve, or there are other issues related to it. So I think, as I said, I'll circulate the paper, and people can probably look or try to find the part that specifically deal with the locking issue. But I think I want people to make sure as well that they understand that there are very other elements that are addressed in that paper as well that are not part of the charter of this working group to look at.
There was an earlier outreach exercise, is what I understood when I looked at this in the charter drafting team. There'd already been comments taken. I don't know if it was from the public, but I didn't keep the papers, not knowing I was going to be on this group. But I meant, gathering what I had gathered from that was that there was an outreach exercise that had already been undertaken with, certainly with the registrars.
I think that relates to the overall, that's the previous issue paper on
it certainly covered this issue in some detail, as I remember. I just don't have it to hand because I didn't keep the papers. But there has already been an outreach, I'm pretty sure of that, on this topic with properly detailed responses on this issue. Yeah. So, I just think we should start with that material, and then, we don't want to test the patience of the people we're asking to give their time and their energy.
If you can share those papers, that would be great, because I'm not really sure what you're referring to, because the information I drew was from the issue report on UDRP, where there were different public sessions and public comment forums where indeed the issue of locking was mentioned, and that those are the parts I took out of the report and highlighted as well in that information document. So if there's something else that specifically addressed the locking, I think that would be really helpful, and I agree that the working group should definitely look at that. So if anyone has that information, that would be great.
Okay, Sherry?
Yeah, my only comment was you had mentioned that possibly reaching out to the registrars to get information about their protocols and procedures would be informative or a possible path. And so I just want to make a little bit of comment about that. When we were drafting our own sort of specialized policy at XXX for dispute resolution issues, I learned at that point that obviously different registrars do different things, and there's clearly privacy proxy service implications in the locking procedures. So I think, I don't know if there's a pre-existing document that registrars have already shared this information. That would be interesting, I think, because I do think that registrars may do it differently. I don't know that there's a uniformity in that regard. And I had the sense that some registrars might be more forthcoming than others, which is probably always the case. But it might just be generally helpful for the dispute resolution providers themselves to have information about what registrars do. So if we did get some sort of input and was able to share that with providers, I think that would be a value in and of itself as well.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. John, you had your hand up, I think.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't understand the confidence issue around the previous document either. I was told it wasn't to be shared, and don't know why, and am simply, mystified by it.
Okay, fair enough. Just in relation to the couple of comments people made about feedback and stuff in the past, my own recollection was that we and the registrar stakeholder group provided feedback in relation to UDRP overall, as in the entire UDRP review, as opposed to specific issue. So while there might have been comments and input specific on this specific issue, also a lot of input on UDRP reform in general, I think that might be the documents that somebody was referring to. But again, I could be misremembering. Okay, then. We've got about 2 minutes left, so I think we need to wrap up. Okay, 1 second. There's another comment on the chat there from Matt. He's going straight to a public comments, may not result in as effectively targeted public comments on just the lock issue, having the background and current registrar practice. It'll also at least let public commenters specifically comment about what current practices work or don't and why. Okay. The next meeting is scheduled for same time next week. We can continue discussions on such matters as the status quo and other things via the mailing list. It would be helpful. Speaker, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I've also been trying to keep track on the different issues we raised, and because we did go a bit into approach on certain things. So I've also updated the mind map, and we'll also circulate that to the working group after this call.
Okay, thank you. Right then, does anybody have any other issues they wish to raise at this time? Not. During this meeting, and I'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.